Blog Talk Radio.
We come together today to deal with an ugly chapter in our nation's history. And we come together today to offer our nation's apology. To say to you, the forgotten Australians, and those who were sent to our shores as children without their consent, that we are sorry. Sorry that as children you were taken from your families and placed in institutions where so often you were abused. Sorry for the physical suffering, the emotional starvation, and the cold absence of love, of tenderness, of care. Sorry for the tragedy, the absolute tragedy, of childhoods lost. Childhood spent instead in austere and authoritarian places where names were replaced by numbers, spontaneous play by regimented routine, the joy of learning by the repetitive drudgery of menial work. Sorry for all these injustices to you as children who were placed in our care. And let us resolve this day that this national apology becomes a turning point in our nation's story, a turning point for shattered lives, a turning point for governments at all levels and of every political hue and colour to do all in our power to never allow this to happen again.
We were like little soldiers in orphanages. We gave up our childhoods.
You're one of the many, you're one of the numbers. You're not the little girl, Helena, that, you know, wants so much just to have a hug or a cuddle or told that everything's going to be okay. You kind of get downbeaten and feel like that you're trodden on and that you're nothing, you're just a piece of garbage, you're just existing basically.
Welcome to Fire Talk Production. This is Fire Talk, and I am your host today, Russ Letica. What you just heard was the apology, November 6, 2009, from Prime Minister Kevin Rubel, opposition leader Mr. Malcolm Turnbull. They issued this motion of apologies to the forgotten Australians on behalf of the nation. Now, this apology comes from after atrocities of not only stealing children, but imprisoning children of Australia into institutions. Joining us today is one of those forgotten Australians. I don't like to use that word forgotten because you are remembered, but the forgotten Australian is a term applied to more than half a million non-Indigenous children immigrants. Also, there was Indigenous immigrants involved with those who experienced care in the institution outside of a home setting during this time period of the 20th century. Today, we have joining us one of those Australians, Leah Weston Ryan. So with that, I'd like to introduce Leah to the show, and let's hear from a survivor, someone who's strong today but remembers her past. So with that, I'd like to welcome Leah. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Russ.
Leah, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you live at now, what's going on, and let's begin there and see if we can explore your past and what has happened there in your lands.
I first become a forgotten, what they have tagged us with as a forgotten Australian when I was aged four. My mum passed away. I was placed in a home in Bondi here in New South Wales, Australia, called Scarborough. It was not the nicest place to be in. They were very cruel to us. I then got out for a little while. I don't know how long I was in there because I can't get files from there. I did end up back in other homes later on because things were happening in the home, in my father's house or within my street, and I kept running away from home, and I did end up back in other children's homes.
So you've actually been in two of these
Three.
Different places. Three.
Three.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Throughout your lifetime.
And I don't like the word care, and I don't like the word home, because to care for somebody is to love somebody. So I don't think that the government or anyone should call it care, because we weren't cared for.
Right.
I don't believe that they should call it homes. It was children's institutions or children's jails.
Right. So now you were—you said you were 4 years old. Is that correct?
Yes, I was.
So what happened to you before in the first 4 years?
I live with my mum and my father and my rest of my siblings. Mum went into hospital to have a baby, and she not only died, but the baby did too.
Oh.
After that, I really cannot say why Dad put us in a home or anything like that. I just know that there was many children and maybe he couldn't cope. I don't know the answers to that.
How many children were they before she went in?
My mum died having her 18th child. In saying that, there were three sets of twins in that. There's about 14 months, between 11 and 14 months between the whole lot of us.
You said 18?
She was having her 18th child when she passed away.
Oh, my goodness.
And the baby died with her.
Wow. Yeah, I imagine that would be a lot to try to figure out, especially how men were then. That would be a lot to handle. So were all the children placed?
12 of us were.
What happened to the other ones?
They were older, and I think they were smart enough to go out and get jobs at that time they could. I've not got to know those brothers and sisters because they've not been a part of my life.
So
can I tell you why I think they weren't a part of my life?
Yes.
Is because when I did come back to my father's house, I'll have to call it because I can't call it a home, he was married to my mother's sister. So my auntie then became my auntie / stepmother.
Wow.
At no time did they ever discuss with me what happened to Mum, what type of person Mum was. I do not have the answers to why the younger ones were in homes. In saying that, I know that there wasn't pensions, there wasn't help from the government. I'm hoping that is the reason that Dad put us in the home, but I do not know the answer to that.
Did your stepmother have children as well?
She had two.
She had two and then...
Yes.
Now, that was from your father or before your father?
No. She was married to an uncle of mine, and I'm not sure what happened. I know she got divorced from him, and she married my dad. I do not know how this came about. I've got no idea because, as I said, nothing was ever discussed with us at all. And the only time that I ever spoke about my mum was I asked my nan, who lived four doors down from us, what was my mum like? And she said, if you had auburn hair, you'd be the spit out of your mother's mouth. And all I thought was my mum was bad because that's what was instilled in me. I know better now.
So in the schools, did they ever talk to you about your family or anything like that?
No. No. In Scarborough, as young as I was, my memories are really strong about that place, and we were treated very badly in there. There was no love, there was no cuddles, there was no affection whatsoever. It was so cold.
Who ran those schools?
I opened my book from Scarborough the other day after speaking to you, and it's from the, and I mightn't be able to pronounce this word properly because I'm not the best with words. It was run by the Beleference Society.
Okay.
And now that I, because this book was sent to me with a letter saying that there was no files kept, that a matron who ran the place kept a diary, and she was able to take that diary with her. Until the other day, when I went down to a girlfriend's place to photocopy some of this for you, that's when I opened the book. And when I was saying to you last week, when I read my poem about my sister's being in another section,
mm-hmm.
and I could see them, in this book, it confirms what I knew happened by reading other people's stories, and I am going to send you this book.
Oh, thank you very much. You've already been so kind sending stuff, but I love having the history of it and being able to share your story.
And there was one, you asked me last week if there was any boys, and I said to you, I don't know. In this book you'll find that there was boys in the home, and they were separated from their siblings, also their girl. I'm just going on what's been written in this book. I couldn't confirm with you about that last week, but I can confirm it with you now. There was boys in Scarborough.
Oh, okay.
So, once you get the book, you can read through it, and you'll understand where I'm coming from.
Oh, I definitely will. So can you tell us what a normal day would be, or a normal week, or however you'd like to describe it?
We had to get up very early in the morning. As I told you last week, I often went to bed and was degraded for that. When I was over to make my bed, we had to make it as if we were in the army.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be spot on. I remember coins being dropped on the bed, and if it wasn't made properly, you had to strip that bed and make it until it was army-like made. It had to be so spot on. We had to carry our own mattresses out. Well, I did anyway. I had to carry my own mattresses out. They were made of some type of heavy straw or something, and to air the mattresses. Like, I'm a four-year-old little girl trying to drag a mattress out, and I can see me doing this and how heavy it was for me. Not one of those. And from this book, it says that nurses run this home, and no one came and helped me, except when they broke my hand, because I was born left-handed. They then allowed my sister to come and help me get dressed and undressed morning and night. Other than that, I didn't see my sisters.
Now, what happened to your hand?
Because I was born left-handed, they got a rubber knife and broke it and said to me that I had the devil in me. When my hand healed and I started writing again with my left hand was tied to a chair, and I was taught how to write with my right hand. I had no choice. I just had to do what they said.
Wow. So much history of left-handed people being treated that way. It's just a horrible thought to even imagine doing that to a child. Russ, is there anything you'd want to add right now?
Well, I was just thinking when Lee was speaking that I see the similarities in what happened with the Native residential schools.
Yeah.
That same type of, see, in the residential school issue, it's in my mind that these nuns and priests and people who ran these institutions and governments who allowed them did this because of what a child looked like, because that child was brown-skinned, because that child was Indian, and they deemed those people as savage. So it was okay to degrade and do that to children that were of a lesser value to a master race.
Yeah.
But hearing this coming from Lee, the same type of hatred and similarities are there, except for now they're doing it to their own.
Well, the
so I don't
one thing about
this.
The forgotten Australians that people don't realize is there was an effort to whiten up the population and have the working class become white.
Right.
So in doing this to the children, they were replacing one color skin with the other over time. And that's the reason I think the white children were sent over on ships and everything to populate it. But they still were beaten and uneducated so that they could become the working class. But the working class would become white skin instead of dark skin.
In the homes that I was in, there was a lot of Aborigine children in there too. I'm not saying that they were from the stolen generation, because I don't know. The ones I've spoken to, they're the same age as me, and they weren't stolen. They were in normal homes, house situations like me, and things happened in their lives that they ended up in children's homes too. So they weren't actually stolen from their tribes or anything like that. So that's where the difference is. But I'm only talking on behalf of the friends that I've got.
Right.
Because those schools were a separate thing from these institutions. These schools, they had schools on Australian land, just like on native land, that were geared just for the Aboriginal child. But like in Canada, a lot of natives ended up in institutions labeled crazy. They're mentally ill, and these were natives that were later found out to be used as the mental experiments that they did on these individuals. Was there any of that going on?
I was just about to say that we, a lot of us children, were given drugs to so that they could find out the reactions from the drugs by giving them to us children. I remember drugs being given to me, and it was called Lardatrol. It used to make me very docile. A lot of children were given so many drugs, and one of my brothers, I don't know what they gave him, he ended up with polio. So the vaccine that they gave him, I believe, caused the polio.
Sure.
I don't know what it was that they gave him, but I just know how it affected him.
Did you know of any sterilizations of children?
Not really.
All right.
Not
that
really.
Would make sense if they're wanting to whiten up the population, where on the other there were sterilizations.
I know a lot of women that were given these drugs that later on had children with I wouldn't say disabilities because I don't believe special needs children.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that would make sense.
I was lucky that my three children turned out okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's more than atrocity. It's more than crimes against humanity at this point. It is now producing the sicknesses and the illnesses that we face today, that have national and international campaigns to raise money for cancers and to raise money for polio.
Yeah.
The stuff was all man-made, and it was experimented on children 50, 60, 70 years ago in our lifetime.
A lot of my girlfriends that I was in homes with have died in the last 4 or 5 years with cancer. Some have got asbestos in their body. When I was in Parramatta Girls Home, the isolation block, apparently they had pulled that down because it was filled with asbestos. And my friends are suffering now today. Some have died through it. There's nothing in our records to show that we were given any medical treatment whatsoever. What drugs were given to us are not in any of our files. It's very hard for us to prove that any of us were given anything. We have only got our memories and know what was given to us.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind.
It makes it very hard for us to fight the government.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that they would put that kind of information in the front books. But I also know that they documented everything they did, and that stuff is hidden in the back books. You know, they're never going to admit to it, ever. Don't ever expect them to, because they never will. It's the continual
lie. And we know that here in Australia?
Excuse me?
We know that here in Australia, and this is why, even if we had somebody, a lawyer that, or solicitor that would take on our cases, we haven't got the evidence there
right.
in our files
right.
to prove that we're telling the truth, but we know that we are.
It takes decades to produce this evidence. And today is the day you work. You may never see justice in your lifetime from this, but you work today to document, to bring that justice in the future. And that's what's been going on in the Native, you know, in the issue of the Native schools. This stuff has been being documented for decades, and we still see no justice today. But we get apologies. They like to tell us how sorry they are. You know, I'm done with
when
I'm
my
sorry.
Friend Graham.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
When my friend Graham wrote a song, he came over and we discussed it, and he said he was going to call it Sorry, and I said Sorry is just a word, so that's why he called it Sorry is just a word. I think Neil's going to play it after we speak today.
Beautiful. Absolutely. It is. Sorries come with actions. I don't respect the word until I see the action, and then I know the person who said it really meant it, you know? What about justice?
I'm not saying...
It's about time to stop saying I'm sorry and to bring about a justice, because I'm sorry, and natural healing comes naturally when justice is applied.
As I was telling Nell last week, a lot of the states did get redress. I really don't understand how the government or the church has come up with an amount to give these people for what they went through. In saying that, a lot of them have made their life a little bit easier by accepting that money. And a couple I have spoken to, and I did tell Nell this last week, they felt like prostitutes taking the money, and I had to talk them into not so much into taking the money, but doing something nice for themselves with the money, because they deserved whatever they got.
Right.
And I'm glad that some states did get some money. New South
exactly.
Wales, Victoria, the capital of Australia, which is ACT, and Northern Territory, we have not received anything. If I was lucky enough to get anything, I would put it on my home to make my life a little bit easier, so
sure.
that my children, my grandchildren can benefit from me later on in life.
Let me ask you a question.
Money in my hands. Yes.
Let me ask you a question. In Australia, when those people who had survived the atrocities was given that money, did that money stop them from speaking out anymore? Because here in Canada, if you took the money, you no longer had the rights to tell your story. Did that same thing happen there?
I cannot honestly answer you that.
Okay.
What I do know for a fact is once they were given the money, they had very limited counselling after that.
Okay.
No one really to talk to. The doors were closed on basically that. At the moment, we here in New South Wales, we can still get counselling. I'm doing my counselling through my doctor through my counsellor getting the 2 years in for me from my doctor. I don't rely on the government organisations here to get my counselling for me.
Okay.
A lot of FAs from Western Australia and everything like that have told me now they can only have limited counselling, and yet when we were apologised to by not only Kevin Rudd, but also to Nathan Rees here in New South Wales, we will promise ongoing counselling for as long as we need it, and they have broken that promise.
Yeah, of course they did. Yep.
You know, and there's another thing, too, with that counseling. You're right in doing what you're doing. You are on the right path, sister. It is when you, it is you doing your own way of healing without their help. I find it almost intrusive into the healing process itself to have to sit there and heal with those who did this to you.
Right.
You don't heal with the rapist. You don't heal with the murderer. You don't heal with the thief. So you certainly don't go into healing groups with them. You know? Their whole concept is to whitewash it away, to pay money, to exonerate them from crimes of sexual, mental, and physical abuse towards generations of children worldwide.
I found, too, also, Russ, with the organisation that I deal with here in New South Wales, when I used to ring them, I found because they never walked in our shoes, they weren't as compassionate as the psychologist that I've got now. She has really looked into what the Forgotten Australians went through after she took on my case. But me as a person. She went out and she learnt about us Forgotten Australians and what we've gone through. I find talking to the organisation I deal with here in New South Wales, they've got me to a stage that I will not ring them anymore. And the reason I say this is the government granted us so much per year to better our lives. I, 2 years ago, my stove broke. I rang this organisation up. It took me 6 weeks and proof from my doctors that I had poor health to get a stove because they said white goods didn't come in under their agenda.
Right.
And in saying that, I think I said to Noel, I asked, oh, all right, we'll get me a black stove. That was my sense of humour, but I thought that I had to beg. And I did have to be. It took me many tears and many weeks of phone calls before I was granted a $549 stove. And I had to go out and pick out the cheapest stove and really fight for it. Last year, they gave me a computer. They didn't make me beg too much for that in saying that they chose the computer for me. I've had so much trouble with that computer since I got it. And not only that, who they dealt with gave my phone number out to somebody pretending that they were HP, and they rang me and my computer actually crashed because I believed that they were from HP, and now I've been dealing with HP, and now that my computer's working at the moment. Will it last? I don't know. I was able to give them the phone number of this company that said they were HP, and they said to me, who has given them their phone number, your phone number? And the only ones that had my phone number was the organisation, that home phone number I'm talking about, was the organisation that I deal with, who in turn had to give it to Officeworks. So I believe that it came from Officeworks. Because when the man first rang me up, he told me my hard drive was about to crash and I would have to pay $380 to get my hard drive fixed. And I said, no, my computer's under warranty. And then he said, no, we'll fix it up from our end to yours. And when I came back home, I went up to Queensland not long after that. I've had nothing but trouble with my computer. Now I'm dealing with HP directly. They have finally sent out a technician and fixed my computer up. Officeworks had no right to give my phone number out to whoever it was.
Well,
please.
I tell you, the first thing I would have done is I would have never accepted a computer from them because it wouldn't be for me to reach out to communicate. It'd be for them to reach in and see what I'm doing.
The only
I wouldn't have those problems
to
begin with, you know.
Go ahead.
The only reason that I did accept a computer from them, my caseworker happened to ring me on the day that my other computer crashed, and I was telling her, and she said, I can get you one.
Oh,
I'm on a pension. I'm paying my home off. I haven't got the spare money, so I accepted it.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to
I understand.
I didn't have.
Yeah. What I'd like to do is go back before the time catches us and talk about some of the different things from being raised in these places that you've had to battle as an adult. You were saying about being able to cry. How were children treated that were crying in those places?
The more I cried in the home, the more I got built it. So I learnt not to cry and show my emotions. I copped the hidings. I copped any abuse that they gave me because I knew if I cried, I would cop more. And I believe that they got off on and seeing us cry, so I wasn't going to give them the satisfaction. So I stopped crying, and it was only after hearing the song at the first apology with Nathan Reese and a lady coming out and singing a song from Shania O'Connor,
mm-hmm.
This is to my mother, that's when my first tears in 50 years started rolling down my eyes. They've not stopped since. I walk down the street and for no reason at all, the tears just roll, but I'm not ashamed of that.
No, that's a beautiful thing. So, do you find that to be true with a lot of people who went through those schools, that they have a lot of repressed emotion?
Very much so. A lot of them, especially trust. We have got so many trust issues, and I understand that completely.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody gives, up until 2.5 years ago, if somebody gave me a compliment, why are you saying this to me when it's not true? Now I know and can accept a compliment. I didn't know how to accept a compliment at all.
And that is something that most people take for granted. But when you've never heard a kind word for years, it can be painful when somebody does show you kindness because your body and mind don't know how to process it at all.
It could come over as false. That's false, when actually
right.
That's the positive, right? It's got
right.
your thinking completely turned around.
Yeah.
In saying that, Russ, I've always, for as long as I can remember, I've treated people with kindness and showed my affection that I can give them because I think that, like, even if you walk down the street and you say hello to somebody and put a smile on their face,
mm-hmm.
To me, that's it, my gift to them. It wasn't given to me as a child.
So when you were
right.
learning, after you left these places, and you were learning to interact on basic levels, like a hug, a smile, or kind words, how long did it take you to where you got to where that was more comfortable for you?
I think that if I hadn't met my husband, my first husband, who was also a forgotten Australian, I may have ended up never being married. He taught me so much, and in turn I started accepting things and knowing that I was worthy to a certain level. In saying that, my insecurities were very, very bad. I never knew what jealousy felt like. I do now. I didn't know how to feel. He taught me how to feel. So I hadn't met him when I did. I may have spent the rest of my life just being numb. I don't know.
Right.
And these memories have only come back to you in kind of a recent amount of time, hasn't it?
It's not the memories of being in the children's home that's come back to me. It's the abuse that I went through from members of my family. I always knew I was in a home, and I always knew how cruel they were. In saying that, I believed that I deserved everything that I got until 2.5 years ago. I am now working on that. I know now that I didn't deserve it, along with a lot of forgotten Australians. We know now that we were only children. We didn't deserve any of this treatment.
Exactly. And there was never anything wrong with you to begin with. It was the system you were put in that was rotten to the core. But there was nothing ever wrong with the children.
Yeah.
No, and I mean, I've got three children of my own, and and I look at them, and they are my life. I'm not going to say why my dad put us in the home, because I don't know. But I look at my children, and when my husband got killed, there's no way on God's earth that I would have put my children into the system that I came out of. I was told that if I wanted to go on the pension after I became a widow, I would have to make my children state wards. No. Not a chance in hell would I ever do that to my children. I worked of a night. I think I told you why my sister looked after my children of a night. I worked so that I could keep my family together.
And I'm so glad that you did, because I would hate to see another generation have to survive the same thing. It takes so long to recover from something like this. Do you remember when you first held your first child? Where were you able to feel love and all those things at that point in your life?
Yes, when they put Billy in my arms, I just looked down at him and I could feel the love come out of my heart straight into his, and I was just so in awe of the emotions that came out of my heart. I just couldn't believe that I was capable of these feelings, and to feel that, it was great. With my other two children, I felt the same thing. It was just a mother and child bonding together. I know a lot of forgotten Australians that haven't been able to do this with their children.
Right.
They're learning now. That they are learning now.
Even something as basic as a hug is something that y'all had to learn how to do.
I think if I hadn't met Bill, my husband, and he taught me how to love, I wouldn't have known how to give it to my children. So I'm glad that I met him.
We've heard the same thing from other survivors we've talked to on all continents that say the same thing. They simply didn't know how to say I love you. They didn't know how to say, you know, I care, I love. There was no emotion. You said it earlier when they beat you for crying. You know, when your emotions are beat, you learn not to show them because you don't want to get beaten anymore. I think that's a natural instinct, you know. And I'm glad to see that you've been able to come out of that, and that you produced three beautiful human beings in this world. And you were able to love them and show that love to them so that they can then grow up and produce more people like that. Because I think I don't understand the mindset, because I don't want no one that's listening to think that this is all stuff from the past, that
right.
This only happened in the past, because it still happens today. The reason we bring these shows on and bring people like Lee the strong people who want to come on and get this word out is to get people today to start thinking this system is still in place today, and it is still happening to children around the world. So it hasn't stopped.
And that is the annoying part. We've got Department of Community Services here in New South Wales that do go in and take children from their mums and their dads because if something's gone wrong, and they put them in foster care, and they do try and work in with the families and try and get the families back together, but in some cases the children do not return back to the families.
And more
why,
than,
I can't
more
answer
so.
For that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a shame, because a lot of the mums and the dads today, they've got to realise too, and I'm not sticking up for docs, and I'm not degrading these parents.
Right.
What I'm saying is if they learned to become mum and dad first and put their all into their children rather than into their drugs and alcohol and their abusing one another, many children would not, docs would not interfere.
You're absolutely right. The problem is not stopping them from doing it. The problem is stopping the thinking that produces children that allow them to come in and steal in the first place.
Yeah.
That is responsible parenting.
It's called breaking the cycle, I think, Russ.
Yes.
Because
I agree.
Many, and I've spoken to many of forgotten Australians, and they have told me that they didn't know how to treat their children, and their children ended up back into the system. So another generation of forgotten Australians began. And that they've learnt now, and the damage that was done years ago, they are trying so hard to fix it up with their own children now. You know, I've spoken to a lot of parents that single mums whose husbands died or whatever happened in their lives, their children were taken off them, and they were given drugs to sign false adoption papers. And now they're trying to connect with the children. And like our files, their files were falsified. Some of them have even found out that it wasn't even their signatures that
right.
signed these papers. So somewhere along the line, this cycle needs to be broken. And it's up to our governments and our Catholic churches to stop this from going on time and time again. If a parent's in trouble, help them. Don't hurt them. Give them the counselling they need.
Absolutely.
You know, like, give them all the help. Don't spend thousands of dollars putting the kids back into a system that was destroyed us. Put the money in to help these parents become better parents and know their worth as a parent. Because everybody's childhood. Something went wrong in their childhood, and they, like mine, they didn't know how.
That's what the common sense heart. That's what the common sense heart of humanity would do. You're absolutely right. That's what we should be doing. Unfortunately, we have governments that now broker their laws instead of legislate them. So we have companies who profit billions and billions of dollars, like pharmaceutical companies, that now have the medicines that human children were used as guinea pigs to produce. As they produce the virus that needs that medicine. It is continually empire building of capitalism. Capitalism has taken away the human heart. You have replaced your higher power, your God, with the dollar bill. So this has all been geared. They weren't just torturing children and using them as medical experiments for no good reason. They were making billions off of it.
And I believe that they still are today.
I really believe that they still are today. It would take a majority of the world to stand up.
Russ, I was telling Mel last week that many forgotten Australians were sent to dental clinics for the trainee dentist. And we were used as guinea pigs so that they can learn. And 9 out of 10 of us have to wear false teeth because we were neglected. Our teeth were pulled out for no reason. I went up until I was 19 with my 2 front teeth missing until I went out and I bought myself a set of false teeth. And it was only 2 teeth, but in saying that, the rest of my teeth eventually had to come out because of the damage that these trainee dentists used on not only me but many forgotten Australians. And as you said, I don't even like the word forgotten Australians because we are remembered. It's just a shame that there's so many out there that do not even know about us. An example of that, which I have spoken to Nell about, is when I went down to Centrelink because I've been given 2 birthdays. You know, I had to explain to those government workers what a forgotten Australian was and why we were tagged with... We are tagged with the forgotten Australians. A lot of us have become friends with the tag.
You know what just struck me? How can you say I'm sorry without educating your descendants to the truth?
Exactly.
So all those I'm sorrys mean nothing when you don't bring the truth of that I'm sorry for into the educational system of how you're going to raise your children for the future. So you're only sorry today, you're not sorry for yesterday, and you won't be sorry tomorrow. You're only sorry today because the cameras are rolling. Stop saying I'm sorry.
Yeah, and they have to spend their lives educating people on what a forgotten Australian is when everybody should know that already. Once they issued the apology, they should have educated people on what it is and what they really did.
You want to show honor and dignity to your sorry, then you recognize those that you did it to. And everyone should know those names and those words.
Exactly.
And work with us, not against us. The government had put a wedge between a lot of forgotten Australians because of their lies.
Yeah, can't go into
They've brought more trust issues into a lot of forgotten Australians because they said sorry, but they did nothing to help us. You know, they've handed some organisations some money to help us educate ourselves. Well, why don't they use that money to get out there and educate the rest of the world what we went through so that then it doesn't happen to other children?
But you know, that's going to come from the grassroots.
Sorry, Russ?
That's going to come only from grassroots efforts, like your group there in Australia, the Forgotten Australians. It's those kind of grassroots organizations is what's going to bring that type of knowledge forward, because a government is never going to turn on itself. They produced it.
Because then they've got
to
admit their liability. And if they admit
right.
their liability, then thousands on thousands can sue them, and they don't want that.
They don't
Sorry
want that.
Is just a word,
you know,
and it means nothing to us.
People should want to abolish them when it comes out, and that's why you'll never get their help. This kind of work comes from grassroots efforts, and that's why it's very important for the activist and the artivist to continue. And social media has been a wonderful tool to bring truth into what's actually happening. Now, I understand it's not filtered truth, so my truth ain't the same as the next person's, and the next person sounds as crazy to me as mine did to theirs. But at least there is a flow of information.
Yeah.
That people can cipher through. And I believe it is in that flow of information that we see how people think, that we can then begin to understand how to change that perception. I don't know how to change one's perception until I know how one thinks. So I think social media is a great tool. Some people like to use it as an idiot. Some people are very ignorant to things until they put themselves into it and start to learn. So I think social media is the truth in communication. As crazy as it gets, I believe it is the truth in communication. From there, we begin to feel and understand how people think the things they think.
Yeah.
You know?
I personally have rang up a few radio stations here in New South Wales and asked, could I go on and speak about my past, not only me but others? And they've said, we'll get back to you, and I've never, ever heard back from them. And I believe that the radio stations, or the television shows, are told by the government, no, don't get involved with these people.
Yeah,
because that gives that exposes the government and the churches more.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the only time that the people wanted the interview is right around the apology time.
Yeah.
After that,
yeah.
They don't want to hear anything about it.
No,
our media is also controlled and projected.
Yeah.
Sorry?
You know, I said our media here on this continent is also controlled and projected.
Yeah.
It's like an instant dose of the brainwashing drug. They put on TV what they want you to hear and what they want you to know, not the truth.
So, Lee, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about how your education piece, and then we're going to go into the poem you wrote. But I want people to understand what kind of education you were given and what you had to do to gain the skills that you have now.
I was given very little education as a child. I did learn to count because I was in isolation a fair bit, and they had lots of bricks there, so I learned to count. So I became very good in math. I educated myself by going to TAFE. I did have a tutorer, and I then became a welfare officer. I still can't pronounce a lot of words properly, and I can't spell it great at the end of the day, but it's people do. I interact with people and educate people as well as I can. I get the message out there, and a huge thing that I have learned is not only to listen to people but to hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
The fine line between people saying, I can hear you, but you've got to also listen to what they're saying and acknowledge that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've learned that
absolutely.
By becoming a welfare officer and sitting down with clients and listening to their stories and being able to acknowledge what the pain that they are going through. So any education that I have had, you know, like I went to TAFE for 4 years. It's not a long education, but it's given me enough insight to get into and help other people.
So you've written some poems. Do you have one you want to share with us?
This one that I'm going to share with your listeners and you today is called No More Silent Tears, that I wrote.
Okay.
Okay. It's called No More Silent Tears. Years have gone past. I'm older now and remember my past. Blocked away for nearly 50 years. At long last, I can cry real tears. My mum had passed when I was 4. Tears flowed easily and reached the floor. In the home where I was placed, they belted me for crying, so I dried my little face. Leaving their home and growing into my teens, I cried inside, so not to be seen. The silent tears made me want to scream, hidden out of others. I was so mean. Until I was locked into another home for running away the streets I would roam. Picked up by welfare who didn't care. Sentenced to Parramatta, it just wasn't fair. I blocked everything to protect my mind, taking on other things, I thought I was fine. September 19, 2009, the government said sorry. My memories came back, but not in a hurry. And I wrote this a couple of years ago. So over the last 10 months through depression and pain, all memories have surfaced and now I feel sane. Getting my life together so my family can gain. I do cry with tears as I have no fears.
Hmm.
I still have fears. I have to be honest with you. I just still have fears.
You wouldn't be alive if you
did. That poem just come from my heart.
Oh, it's beautiful. And to think of you as that little child that received hardly any education and having to fight to even learn how to write, and now you're on a show reading a poem, it to me is just a testament of what's possible.
Yeah. I have one message for you.
I want to thank you. Yes.
I have one message for you, Lee, and that message is you continue to show your love, for it is in that love that you continue to heal yourself. You are a beautiful person, and you have educated your way. You have educated yourself in the lessons that life has given you. You have fed the good wolf inside you,
mm-hmm.
and you have grown very
strong. I want to thank you,
and I am proud to be your friend.
Very much. I want to thank you both so much for letting me share my poem on air. One thing, Neil, we were talking about the years. This is the last thing I'd like to say before, because I know that you've only got a short show. I'm going to send you this book about Scarborough.
Okay.
We were talking about when the beginning of homes began by this. I think it says 1927.
Mm-hmm.
And Scarborough was closed in, I think it was 1986. There was places like Winlayton in Victoria. Now, a lot of the younger generation, forgotten Australians who were in their 37s and everything, they were very much part of our system. And some of them didn't get out until 1994.
Wow.
So I know Parramatta and Hay closed in 1974. I have not got the answers to when the other homes did start closing down, but I have got a lot of forgotten Australian friends, including Nikos, who you've spoken to by inbox. She is 37 years of age, and she went through the same hell as I did, and she's my daughter's age.
So you know what she's going to go through in her life because you've been through it.
Exactly, and that's why we're friends.
Yeah.
Well, I know I'm...
You know, and I have become friends with so many forgotten Australians, and I'm proud to call them my friends.
It's in that help that you guys help each other. Absolutely.
And I want to thank you both for letting me have my say today.
Oh, it's an honor to know you. I just love your spirit, and I am so happy that we connected, and I look forward to talking to you every day.
Okay, thank you again.
All
thank
right.
Walk in the sunshine.
Bye.
Walk in the sunshine,
and,
sister.
And thank you to all your listeners for hearing me out, and I'm glad I didn't cry this time. Thank you.
Oh, you're so sweet. You have
smile.
A wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Thank you. Bye.
It is incredible the amount of similarity between their story and the residential schools and the industrial schools. It's just mind-blowing to realize how similar they are.
Absolutely. It was like it was the same mind on different continents, which tells me that those were the minions
mm-hmm.
of the Vatican itself. There was one
yeah.
control nucleus, and it spread out across the lands, and what it was allowed to do to children up until now in our lifetime.
Yes.
You know, we're not talking about, you know, in my parents' day or my grandparents' day, we're talking 1980s, 1990s.
Yeah, late 1990s. I talked to one lady that was 40 years old.
Yeah. Well, this
and
woman,
she wasn't
she's
the
with
last
Dallas,
one in there.
Right.
So I think
so
all these
happening.
Apologies are eliminating the truth that there's some probably even in their, like, mid-30s. That are
Absolutely.
Being forgotten completely.
Absolutely. It's the system is the same thing. It's just
yeah.
modernized its techniques. Today, as you know, I say it all the time, there are more Native children today in state care in Canada today, 2012,
mm-hmm.
than the entire 110 years of the residential schools, where they stole over 200,000 children. And by their own documentation of the Surgeon General, more than 50% of those children died. Children
right.
just don't die. We have more of our Native children in their care today with their facts that says Native children die by at least 50% in their care. There should be an outrage. There should be an uproar as Native children once again in Canada are being stolen. Adopted out for profit, child market, it's child trafficking. Adopted out for profit as they lose their status rights and their rights to any treaties. It continues today under a different disguise.
And
adoption
I bet you the truth is same there. I bet when
mm-hmm.
you create this wave of children raised this way, then you have to assume the next couple of generations are going to suffer
yeah.
tremendously because of it.
Yeah. Nothing's changing. It's the same system over and over again. We're producing. People wonder, when they sit in their living room and they listen to the local news now and they hear about this mass murder in their area or one in the next state over, they
mm-hmm.
think, how can people be like that? How can someone kill someone? Because that's what the human mind thinks, and that's what your heart thinks, and that's what a normal person living their life and working and paying their bills thinks.
Right.
Not realizing it's produced by these atrocities that continue still today.
Yes, we're all connected.
Yeah, and so in 100 years from now, there may be some I'm sorry for what they're doing today.
Yeah.
You know?
And we need to
History.
Find a new way besides this I'm sorry stuff where they get to write checks and walk away.
History That's- repeats itself. And it's and it repeats because it's produced.
Yeah.
You know.
But at least they're having
to
work harder now because we're all learning about each other. And I'm going to continue to bring all the different types of survivors together. And I hope
yeah.
that combined knowledge will create something.
Something. Because something is what needs to be created.
Yeah.
It was wonderful talking with you again today, Nell. Great
you
show.
Too.
Once again. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Yes. Good night.
When you're gone, stories will never ever know how much was stolen from our souls. To be a survivor, who's to know? Across the land, I've heard the call. A call for justice, one and all. They use
see, the rain was coming, clouds were rolling. from the system that was so wrong. Many, if not all, our hearts were broken, but the spirit of the forgotten Australians lives on. So we strive through our lives without freedom, from our land, not supposed to be free. Whatever happened to good old Australia, a place for you and for me. Our imagination, we had no boundaries, just like logs and debris. Was strewn on the rocks from our childhood, then just cast to society. Oh, how I feel our lives have been wasted. From this system that was so wrong. For many, if not all, our hearts were broken, but the spirit of the forgotten Australians lives on. Remember when we were little children in those jails, when we were so small, so small, and all those places we were locked in as babies. There was no love, no love at all. Oh, how I feel our lives have been wasted. From our governments that were so wrong. For many, if not all, our hearts were broken. But the spirit of the forgotten Australians lives on.